I haven't gotten a lot of feedback, but people have said, like, those times that you're drinking Red Bull and eating cashews on mic, can you do that, like, more?
Who told you that?
Some competitive podcast. We're competing for the same 9 listeners.
Wow.
Just kidding. We got way more than 9 listeners. Let's do this.
I just want to say, you did a very good job. So good job.
It's that thing where you're actually kind of smart. Things you say make you sound dumb.
Yeah, we both do that.
What's that called?
Nope.
Yeah, but you're a little different, Dad.
Stop saying sure! Oh, it drives me crazy! Are you seeing
clear? Are you seeing clear? I think most people just ignore the tough questions. This isn't Minecraft. This is real life.
You are hilarious.
That was not the dog, Dad. That was you.
Yeah, to solve this, we have to completely ignore the main problem.
That makes literally no sense to me. I just want to die.
And that, my friend, is one of my favorite things about you.
Hey, welcome to Renaissance Radio, where grocery bags always feel a little bit full of themselves.
Sometimes I feel like a plastic bag.
So anyway, we were talking about all that, and welcome back to Disruptated, episode whatever. There's a chance that this is at like episode 20 or something like that.
I feel like you haven't had that many podcast episodes yet.
I know, it does feel that way, but I think that it may be.
Is this 20?
It may be. 19 or 20 for sure.
I'd like to say, good job.
Yeah, that was the wrong one. Here, hold on.
Can you be more specific?
Here's some of the sound bites, by the way.
I just want to say.
No, that was just that line right there, and then we've got...
Stop saying sure! It drives me crazy!
It's so funny. People have been apologizing to me regularly when they call me sir. Like, it's happened more than 15 times. They're like, it happened at the man's house, Sarah and Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody, he said, yes, sir. And he goes, oh. And she looked at him. She's like, don't do it. It drives him crazy. And I was like, oh, right. And it took me a little while to figure out, like, why that was.
Yeah, you never shared that with me in the past. Is that a real thing?
No, it's sure. Sure. Yeah, it's not even sir. It's sure. Like, you guys know, Harley, you know why I don't like sure.
Sure.
Yeah, right. Sure is what you say to somebody after they've given their argument. And you're essentially saying, I'm done with this, but I don't want to talk about whether you're right or wrong.
Yeah, no, you're, well, when I typically hear it, you're acknowledging what the other person is saying, but you still think they're wrong.
It's similar to like a, yeah, but it's like that kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, no, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah,
and you're
sure.
Like, you didn't hear what I'm saying. You said I hear what you're saying to cover for the fact you didn't hear what I'm saying.
I was just really excited to make my next point, you know?
Yeah, exactly right. I remember saying specifically, I should let the dogs in.
I was going to ask if that's going to be a problem, because
it's going to be a little bit annoying for some of the people, but let's just close the window at least. So Harley, disruptated. Well, first of all, what's been going on in your life, man? You've done some really cool stuff recently. So have I. Let's get people caught up on where we're at.
Yeah, I would say the main thing I did is I went to Chicago, just outside of Chicago, to buy
Is that in Wisconsin or something? Like, where did that come? And that in Chicago.
Chicago.
Oh, let me pass by you there, Chicago. We got our president, President Obama's from here.
And while I was there, I had some Chicago dog sauce, so that was really good.
I'm going to be really honest with you. I don't like that.
Why? You don't like Chicago dog sauce?
Well, I just don't like the name of it. What is it?
It's ketchup.
Oh, gross.
It's a thing in Chicago that you can't put ketchup on a hot dog, so Heinz was like, okay, here.
Have Chicago dog sauce.
And everyone was like, this is incredible.
Thanks again to our sponsor, Single Shot Pepto.
And Chicago dog sauce.
Chicago dog sauce. I think that really, those two things going together was one of the most brilliant moves that these companies have ever done. Chicago dog sauce with single shot Pepto. Satire alert. That's not true. So you went out to Chicago and not for the dog sauce.
No, it was to purchase a super sick Chrysler Pacifica.
Now, here's the deal, man. Like, those were not sick for a long time. They were like an SUV with 4 doors. And I remember, I sold cars, for those of you that don't know, I sold cars in early on. I had a very gracious, while I was a young idiot, I had a very gracious man, Dave Hurlbutt, who owned a dealership.
I'm sorry. Who?
His name was Dave. Shut up. It's an old played out joke. He's as old as we are. He's a little bit older than I am. And he owned a dealership, and he took a shot on me really early on. Which was sick. I didn't really tell you this. I think I kind
of haven't heard. I've heard like all of your stories. I haven't heard this one.
Well, we'll talk about your van here in a minute, but this is kind of interesting.
We got to talk about you first.
Yeah, right. Disreputated by Harley about Jeremy. So anyway, I was in like a really weird spot where I was like arrogantly deprived. Like I didn't have any real skills. But I was maybe more full of myself at that time than any other time. But I was like broke. I mean, I was like broke. And he let me come wash cars there.
Oh, okay.
And so I was washing cars and I didn't have a car and he let me borrow one.
Nice. What was it?
Just what a great guy. It was actually a Lincoln Continental.
Ooh.
And it was unbelievably comfortable. And I've always had a soft spot in my
heart.
You
look like Matthew McConaughey.
I do look like Matthew McConaughey. He obviously has that more gaunt kind of those like skin on muscle gross look.
Yeah,
that's
gross.
More of that full-bodied man look.
That's right.
Sorry, Matthew. I mean, it just is what it is, right? You're in a visual industry and you don't look like me. So like
work at it.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, I have to go the comedian dry comedy route with my body type. I have to talk to Galifianakis and those guys. Hey, man, you got a spot for me? But anyway, I'm washing cars there, doing like an incredible job for a guy who's not good at it and doesn't care. So I've got graciously been given this job. He's let me borrow a car and I'm like trying to do a good job, but I didn't do a good job for a lot of years. And so this car comes in and it's a professor who's this eccentric, very, very eccentric guy. Very eccentric. And one of the most eccentric I've ever met. Like, yeah.
That's saying a lot.
It's saying a lot because, like, I have a mirror. So,
For real.
So, he brings in his car. He's hit 3 or 4 deer with it.
Jeez.
Honda used to have these little cup holders that were, like, this tall. If you're listening on the radio, they were, like, an inch tall. So, the cup would flop around inside. It was terrible. I don't know if, like, it was a Japanese-made car. Maybe they used smaller cups or there. I don't know. So, anyway, there was coffee that you could, like, carbon date. So there was like layers of dried coffee in the cup holder that had different textures and viscosity as you scooped it out with a spoon and then eventually a knife and then eventually a chisel. So there was like life in there. And he was getting ready to take it to the junkyard and the junkyard said, "We'll give you $100 for it." And I freaked out. I was like, "Hey, I'll give you $100 for it." Like, cause suddenly I have a car. It's like a 94 Accord. And he's like, "Great." And I was like, "I'm going to have to make payments." So I made 2 payments of $50 for this car and banged out the hood. One of the headlights was missing. I was just so proud of that thing. I spray painted the...
Put a supercharger in it.
No, but funny story, fast forward later, I started selling it A+, and I was really defensive and had like... I was really like... I don't know. I was kind of slimy more with my coworkers. I was honest with my customers, but I was just like so enemy mindset. Like everybody's out to get me. That I just wasn't very kind and very equitable to my coworkers. And I regret that at that age. I was like 18, 19 years old.
Yeah.
And so fast forward now to selling at Dan Tobin out in Dublin. Here I am, salesman of the month, and I'm selling pretty well. I didn't kill it every month, but I was doing very well. And I'm driving this 94 Honda to work. So I'm like crushing it. And
you secretly loved it.
I did.
Yeah, you love that you were in that car.
I'm an arrogant jerk. I'm like, "Oh, underestimate me. I dare you." You know, what an idiot I was.
Yeah, dude. I do that same thing.
But the owner said that. He goes, "You're not parking in the salesman of the month spot with that car. You have to buy something." And that's when I bought the Pontiac Aztec, which was our favorite vehicle to date.
Bro, you and Walter White.
Oh, yeah, Breaking Bad. So anyway, yeah, that's the... I'm skipping over a lot of that, but that's kind of where I learned to sell. I learned the process of selling at A+ Auto Brokers, which to this day is a great place for you guys to check out. They basically locate vehicles for you. If you're not in a hurry, they just go find them. It's pretty awesome. But then Dan Tobin's where I got my face ripped off. That's where I went in, like, you sold door to door.
Oh, yeah.
And
still
and
do.
You know, yeah, you know the experience of just drowning.
Yeah, I honestly think door to door was probably a little easier than selling cars.
Is that right?
Yeah, man. Like, when you're selling door to door, the hard part is like you're showing up at the customer's house and they're not expecting you. So you've got to deal with that. And you kind of have this like get off my lawn objection that you're working with. In car sales, you know, the customer's coming in. So they like are planning to buy a car, but they are coming in like
for war,
looking for a fight. Yeah. They know that they're going to get a fight.
Right.
They're rehearsing their conversation in the car on the way in. Like, right. Talking to their wife,
like the husband's like manhood is on the line. Like he's literally saying things like, "I'm gonna crush this guy."
Yeah,
and he's like, his masculinity is tied up in his ability to destroy. And here I am, 19 years old, and I'm like learning this. And frankly, those guys never won. Eventually, it was bad. I mean,
yeah,
it was very one sided.
Yeah, it's not. It's not going to end well. Like when you do it every day, it's not a fair fight.
Well, that's the thing. Like they came in to kill me and they did kill me from time to time. It was cussing. It was screaming sometimes. I mean, that business was brutal. Even inside, like I had a guy threaten to kick me in the head. He was a big guy And when I say big,
really
like,
little legs, though.
Well, he did. He was a really sweet guy, but kind of a Humpty Dumpty build a little bit.
Oh, shoot.
And he said that to me one time, and he was about 6 inches shorter than I was. And he goes, you jump in front of me on an up. And up, by the way, customers, is how car salesmen view you. You're not a person. You're an up, which means you go out and get them or whatever. He goes, you jump in front of me in one more of those, I'm going to kick you in the head. I said, I don't think you'll catch me laying down anywhere, and I don't know if you can reach my head. And then, of course, I jumped in front of him on the next one. But, yeah, man, it was a very...
He kicked you right in the shin.
Yeah, it was a very aggressive business. And so the way that I sold, which was very successful, was just played possum all the time. I wore Argyle sweaters. I wore glasses that were not in style. I wore corduroy. If people that knew me saw me walking around a lot, they go, is he a clown?
Yeah, what's this guy doing?
So I would carry my keys around, I would carry my clipboard around, and I would drop them in front of customers and act like I was, like, just not even, I was like Mr. Bean. Like, I was just like, it was just so stupid.
You didn't speak to the customers?
I had, corduroy sport coats with patches on them.
Sounds cool.
With Argyle sweaters under them. Daring. And sometimes wore August. In the summer. And so customers would... That killer mindset where the husband's proving to his wife that he would win in a Spartan battle with a sword by getting a good deal, he would see me and he would go, that's bait.
I'll right really there. Impress my wife yeah, by right. picking on the little guy.
Right. And it was a successful time for me because people were just off guard. They didn't expect it.
Yeah.
I was always honest with them about what was going on, but that business is all about manipulation of,
and misdirection.
Of facts and misdirection. Yeah, yeah, exactly right. And I learned those things, and now, I mean, if you work with me every day, it's very rare that I'm using those things. I would say virtually never use those things in that same context anymore. They're mostly defensive now, primarily.
That's probably fair.
You know, we went out and looked at a car, and you were an expert after the first visit, but the first time we went out and looked for a car, I was just like, well, how would you explain that experience? Like, you're now experienced, you just went and bought a car, and yeah. It was amazing, but how was that first experience? It was like... That's going to happen. Boom.
Oh, it was bizarre, man. I learned a lot. You were telegraphing all these moves. I saw you, you know, like devaluing the car that I was looking at as if, you know, it was a trade-in. And so just seeing you do all those things, when I was shopping for a car, now I'm doing it. And
yeah.
It was just really handy to have all that stuff in my back pocket.
What about
pocket.
The phone?
The phone was insane. The salesman left his phone in...
Well, you didn't know that at the time. He just walked away from the desk. We're sitting at the desk and we're just talking. And he gets up and walks away. And I wrote a note. To you.
Yeah, Jeremy writes a note and says, hey, don't say anything. He's probably listening to our phone call. And he had left his phone in the office and then left and where he called from his...
He called his manager's office from his cell phone. Then he left his cell phone there on, I would imagine, he muted the office phone so we couldn't hear, and he left his phone there. And I didn't even see him do that. I just felt like his leaving was very awkward. And and I sent that to you, and I go, he's listening to us. So he basically left a bug there. And I said, so I'm texting you things, and I'm saying, when he says this, say this, and whatever. And we literally didn't make a sound.
Yeah, we just
for like
sat
five
in
or six minutes.
It was hilarious.
And then he comes back real frustrated. And I don't remember if I said, did you forget your phone, or if he just grabbed
it. He just grabbed it.
He grabbed his phone.
I forgot my phone.
I went, And he goes back, and we went on. But there's these tried and tested like tricks that are just going, they're going away. The whole industry is becoming commoditized. I bought a truck, praise the Lord, super excited. Thank you, Fiesel, for providing, you know,
monster
an opportunity.
Truck. You bought a monster truck.
Well, it's a Dodge Ram, and I'm excited about it. And
with
I went to 48 CarMax. 48-inch
tires.
Yeah, none of that's true. I went to CarMax, which is a place that doesn't negotiate, and as like an expert buyer-seller of vehicles, I was really happy with the experience, you know? I mean, I think in general...
Yeah, you got a good price. I mean...
Yeah, I think in general, the industry is maturing to a way that you don't have to be so leery of the snakes.
Yeah, I thought all that stuff was gone. When I was shopping, I found a dealership that was doing old school bait and switch tactics. I like couldn't believe
it. Let's go. When did you figure out that was happening? What part of the process?
So we found this van and it was like a killer deal. It was the highest trim level and it was priced below another van on their same... website that was a lower trim level.
You mean perfect in every way?
With
inexplicably?
Yeah. Yeah. And so we're like, this doesn't make sense. Something's going on here. You know, maybe they priced it wrong on accident, or there's something that we're not seeing. So I like check the auto report. I call into the dealership, and when I'm on the phone with them, I'm asking them questions about this vehicle. Like, hey, you know, can you tell me a little bit more about what's going on here? And everything they do confirms what I was seeing, right? Like the van price was right.
You saw some reviews that said that, you said?
Well, hold on. I didn't get there
yet. Okay, not there
yet. But they're like, yeah, the van is priced right, like whatever, whatever. And then Mackenzie, while I'm doing this, is reading reviews about them and come to find out one.
She's a boss, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
She's such a researcher.
She's a sleuth.
She could make a living. Yeah, she's a sleuth.
So the first thing is she finds out that they have a mandatory $2,000 add-on fee to every vehicle that they don't disclose in the price. And so.
And the reason for that makes sense. It's because.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I asked them. So I couldn't get the first person to talk to me about it. They're like, I don't know. So I'm like, transfer me to like a salesperson. And she goes, yeah, okay, here's the deal. This $2,000 fee covers oil changes and windshield wipers for like the first year. It's key protection. It's all that
stuff. It took a lot of diligence for you to uncover this. Your initial instinct was just to go out there and buy the car.
Well, it was far away. So that was part of, like, if this was a local dealership, I probably would have just showed up. But I didn't want to drive out there and get, you know, bamboozled.
Yeah.
So.
But my point is a lot of people would have.
Oh, yeah, it
would
was
have
buried.
Gotten to that bamboozle situation. And then if you had old school tactics like that, that are not tricky. That's what I hated. They're not like clever. They're unethical.
Yeah. And here it gets worse, dude. So and then they have this anti-theft thing where you can track the car on an app if it gets stolen. Like, and that's mandatory.
There's key protection.
Yeah.
You pay like $10 a month for key protection.
It's ridiculous, yeah. Bro. So
overbody. Coding.
Here's the deal. We later find out that they don't even have a lot of these cars on the lot. Anymore. They sold them weeks ago, but would post the listing
they just
afterwards.
Leave them up. Yeah.
Or sometimes not even leave them up, dude. Like literally post it new. And then the person would show up and they'd be like, oh, we don't have that car.
Sold it.
Do you want to look at this one?
Yeah.
And so we're like, yeah, we are out on this. But I found
and
a good deal.
The funny thing is that that's the best of the bad situation. If you'd have showed up there, you would have encountered all sorts of snake pit like garbage.
Yeah. It would have been insane. So I ended up flying out to Chicago.
And you arrived at the time you left. That's always my favorite thing about flying to Chicago is you leave at 3 and you get there at 3.
So I'm going to buy this car and it's out at like this podunk dealership in like a farm area, which was really cool. I had a great experience there, but I had to take an Uber to the dealership.
Yeah. When we say podunk, we mean where we actually want to retire eventually.
Oh yeah.
Like,
I love
that's it. That's not derogatory. That's like the most wonderful place in the world.
Yeah. I called my dad on the way back. I was like, I want to live here.
We're going to start a real estate agency called the Podunk Foundation.
So I'm getting an Uber to go to the dealership, and I've almost died in an Uber like twice. So
hold on a second.
Yeah.
No, you haven't.
I have, yeah. One time I was with you.
I might have.
In Vegas.
When I was driving.
No, dude. So the one time was when I was with you in Vegas.
I don't remember that.
Our Uber driver was like, hi. Like wild.
I do remember that. We went to Vegas for a company trip, not the company we're with now, and a different company we worked together for. And can I say we both do? Or is it just me?
No, go ahead.
Vegas is a cesspool.
It's awful.
And the second you step foot there, you need to hose yourself off. It is like the last day of a county fair.
You kept saying that. That's such a good fit.
And it smells like peanut butter and regret. I hate that place. I don't want to go somewhere where it's still legal, like, you know, like the cowboys always wanted to smoke. There's people that are just immodestly dressed all the time. There just is nothing there for you. And I know people say the food is good. If you are stricken by Vegas and say to me, the food is good, you've not traveled. I understand that crab is good there. I've done the $100 buffet. It's fine, but it's in a cesspool.
Yeah.
And so like if you're struggling to find good food, let me know. We'll get you I'll get you a list.
There's like food
trucks. There's places and everybody will be dressed and it'll be you know, like we're literally just walking down the street and there's just this grossness.
Yeah,
there.
It was not
and
fun.
So if you want to argue with me, call into the show and we'll argue, but like it's a cesspool. So we're there. Meanwhile, we're getting an Uber and I do remember this, and he's stoned, like bad.
Yeah, just like totally high, not paying attention.
Swervy dervy.
Yeah, it was sketchy, man.
We were about to get out, I remember.
Yeah, so, and then another time, I'm in Tampa, and my Uber driver almost runs into one of those giant construction signs. I mean, I'm talking like 200 feet away, because he's staring at the stadium, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Stadium.
Which, when you're local, you got to do that. When you're local, you got to check out your stadium
That's
every
right,
time you
dude.
Drive by it.
So this time I go.
You ain't a fan.
I've got like an hour drive to the dealership. I'm like, I'm not going to do this. Like, I'm not going to get some crazy dude. For my hour drive to the dealership.
You should call a Lyft and an Uber, take a look at them, have them take a sobriety test and pick one.
So I just got the nice Uber. I spent up. And I get picked up in an Escalade, bro.
Which is what you deserve, bro. So you're my boo.
I'm getting dropped off at this country dealership in an Escalade. And they're like, who is this guy?
You flip the Uber driver a couple gold coins. And then he says, thank you, Mr. McDuck.
Yeah. Who's this guy showing up in an Escalade at 8:30 in the morning to look at a minivan?
In a dealership. And again, this isn't derogatory because we strive. We think our starting place is the city and our ending place is the country.
That's right.
But you're talking about a place that's surrounded by farmland.
Yeah, I had to drive about an hour and a half on farm roads before I got to a highway when I was driving home.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you get there. And they're like, oh, Moneybag showed up here.
Well, I mean,
we're making that up.
He just laughed at me about it, man. He's like, what is happening?
Yeah.
He wasn't expecting me. I put a deposit down to hold the car for 14 days. And I showed up the next day. He's like, did you like get on an airplane right after you got off the phone with me?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, dude, pretty much. That's what
I do. Not freaking out, but we don't play.
Right.
When we were selling, we realized if people came there with no ride home.
Yeah.
You don't have to fight.
Yeah, right, right. Much. And so, you know, it was a fun experience. Good dealership. I got a good price on the van. My wife's stoked about it. It was an awful drive home.
Because of the vehicle or just because of the distance? And
dude, I've never driven that long by myself.
Is that right?
Yeah. 5.5 hours alone. Wore me out, man.
Yeah.
It was just me and an audiobook.
I know a good podcast you could catch up on.
Never heard of it.
Oh, I hate you. I don't hate you. I love you. I'm fully aware that's so funny. Like, my wife's like, I listened to this episode today and it was really good. And I was like, that's episode 7. Like,
hey, that was the one she liked. Okay?
And she goes, I go, did you listen and you got to 7? She's like, nah, I grabbed 7.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And that's okay. That's all right. What's cool is, yeah, we'll go down a different way. So, speaking of cars, there was something. Let's talk about our disruptated topic today, which is. That was a drum roll. Sorry, I didn't practice that.
So, I don't know how to say it simply, but basically.
So, give us the name and tell us what it is. That's how we start.
There's a company called Fair that is an app, and you can rent a car monthly through them and like turn it in whenever you want, any month.
Is it similar to the original? I'm sorry, guys. I have a couple cashews in my mouth. I'll deal with it immediately. Similar to Netflix DVDs? Keep it as long as you want.
Yeah.
Swap it out anytime.
Yeah, basically. And they have options. Like, you get a better price if you do a traditional 3-year lease. You'll get a little bit of a break. But if you don't want that, you can do a straight up month to month option with flexibility. You pay a relatively small deposit up front. You know, I think the average person was paying $1,000. And then you can pick the kind of vehicle you want. You can pick the payment you want to have. And you just straight up rent this thing monthly. And there's still like miles limits and stuff like that.
So it looks like they describe themselves as the used car lease program. No more cashews for those of you that are visual. My mouth is clean.
But yeah, it's a used car lease program.
Lease an affordable used car from right where you are and for as long as you choose. That formula of what you want, where you want it, when you want it. That's just such a good. Amazon's that way, right? Like,
yeah.
Order what you want, get it to where you are fast. Don't worry about the product. We are a process company.
Right.
This feels like that. We're a process company and the car is kind of secondary. However, the car is primary to me. Car and payment is primary to me.
Yeah, man. And like, I think that's so cool because people's car situation can change pretty quickly. You know, the best way to buy a car from an economic standpoint is to buy it cheap and hold on to it for a long time. But that's not always feasible if your work situation changes, if your family situation changes. It can be difficult to have to deal with that.
Yeah. What would be the different mindsets? So the different mindsets are on far ends of the spectrum. You've got guys like Cardone who are like, never use your own money.
Yeah.
Always use other money. And then we got Ramsey on the other side, which says, let's build a long-term plan that behaviorally gets us to a situation of financial freedom, which is basically buy cash what you can afford. Use that equity that you put in plus the equity of the thing to trade upward after you save.
He's all about trading up.
Time plus savings, then the trade up, and you own everything. And he says that. He says, like, stop calling your $100 car that you bought the Ramsey car. You know, like, he's like, technically that's the first part of the process. But, like, when you've traded your way up to that Mercedes you've always wanted and you paid cash for it, that's the Ramsey car is what he says.
Yeah.
So they're different philosophies. So where does this fall? So let's just use the word lease, for example. There's two things that come to mind immediately. And then I want to hear generally just why you brought it up. But the two things that come to my mind initially before you say that is, number one, tax benefit. So if it's truly a lease, then I can write the whole thing off. That's huge, especially if borrowing is mandatory.
Yeah, I haven't even considered that.
Yeah, so that's number one. Number two is you never own it.
Right.
So positive and negative there. You never own it, but you got a tax benefit, so you get to kind of write this thing off.
Yeah. The situation that attracted me to trade or to fair is
Are you straight out endorsing it right now? Or are you talking about it in a sense of it's disruptive, interesting, and you can participate?
So they're not available in Ohio at this point.
Okay. So this isn't a full endorsement from you yet. You're just saying it's changing. It brings an option that wasn't available before.
Yeah. And I haven't worked out all of the economics either, right? So that can be difficult. But in my situation, I had a car that I liked. I had a Subaru wagon.
Impregna.
And it was great.
Right? I loved the name,
it.
Right?
Yeah, it was an Impregna. You got it. It was an awesome car, but I needed a truck for work. And it was a big step up, right? To sell my car, to buy a truck. Big difference. It was a lot of money. And so I was like,
especially with we're very secure in our day job. We're excited. We're appreciated. We're doing great work. But like the average for our age groups, the average employment length is 18 months.
Yeah.
And you aren't people who are borrowing for most of the vehicle are not doing 18 month terms.
Yeah. And I didn't really like want a truck at the time.
Right.
Now that I have a truck, I love it.
Oh, dude. Now that we have trucks, I've had it for how long have I had mine now?
At least 4 or 5 days.
Like a week. And it's unbelievable to be like, I'm so happy. I hope you guys can be happy with me. It's not a brag. It's just a big moment for me, and I'm excited about it. So, like, it's crazy. I'm renovating the kitchen right now. I'm all tore up, and I'm sore. And I'm like, okay, I got to coordinate. I don't have to coordinate nothing.
Just get in the truck.
I need to, like, throw stuff in the back of the truck.
That's right, brother.
It's great. So we're talking about the economic system.
Well, yeah.
You didn't really work the numbers yet, but the economic system you're familiar with.
Well, yeah. In that situation, I didn't want to buy a truck, but Fiesel gives us a car allowance, as many companies do. And so I was like, well, I could use that car allowance and – I didn't want to go out and lease a new vehicle because, you know, my situation could change at any moment and I'm still stuck with that lease.
We are an at-will state. So like I said, no matter what, how happy we are, you know, we're an at-will state. So like
Any
moment can change.
And so Ramsey talks about that all the time. He's like, you know, you're going to be on the hook at this at the end of the day if your company decides they don't do car allowances anymore. So,
Which is interesting. Like another thing to kind of bring into that is giant companies. Think about this. Giant companies and companies that are very profitable, giant for their region, giant local, giant international, right? There's companies that are giant locally. You know, we're a giant regional company in a sense.
Yeah.
We're technically still small business, but you get the idea. They have every purchasing option available to them.
Right.
They could lease as a vehicle. They decide that monthly is the way to go.
Yeah.
They're making a monthly payment. So these companies, and they all do it that way. Generally, there's some that lease fleet, but like in general, a lot of them go, nah, let's go monthly. So this is kind of, but we're not going monthly. You and I are on the hook for all that cash we put
down,
plus
whatever
we borrowed, if anything.
So here I'm like, I'll keep my Subaru, and I'll just use that when I go around town, and then I'll get this monthly vehicle for $500 or $400 or whatever.
Right.
And I'll use that for work, and then if I'm done with it, I'll just give it back. And so it's
not talking about real life. You're talking about this hypothetical scenario.
Yeah, I'm talking about
fair.
About fair, yeah, man. So that's what I was looking at. And I might have done it if they were in Ohio. Like, I would have really looked at it as an option. Currently, I think they're in California, Texas, and Florida.
That makes sense that they would do a regional rollout.
Yeah.
Can you go cuckoo with it? Like, can I pay a bunch more and get, like, some higher-level cars? Like, Turo? If you haven't seen Turo, it's a rental company like Hertz or anything else. It's not. It's more like Airbnb for cars.
Airbnb for cars, yeah.
So people who have really high car payments and, like, or a really high investment in their car, really nice cars, they can rent that car out. It stresses me the heck out.
I'm actually doing it when I go to Colorado.
Yeah, as a consumer, I love it.
Yeah, right.
But I'm saying like to lease out my 7 Series BMW or something like
stressful.
That, or you know the SLK, whatever, or Mercedes. That's a lot. But I guess insurance is insurance. You have to be insured. If they do something, they got to fix it.
Yep.
And that mitigates a little bit of the risk, just like Airbnb does.
Yeah, it helps a lot.
So this model seems to be what the owners of the companies prefer to do, and it's giving that option available to us.
Yeah.
We can match our stipend up with our vehicle. Now, fortunately, you and I just bought trucks.
That's right, dude. And here's what's also interesting. Uber allows their drivers to lease vehicles, and they ended up partnering with Fair for their program.
Wow. Let's work that out. So you drive an Uber. In general, it's pretty well accepted. I did it for a little while because I had a $700 repair for my car, and I'm like, car, you need to start pulling your weight a little
bit. That's right. So, pay for yourself.
However, when you run the numbers, it's pretty abysmal.
It's tough.
It's not a good investment.
With the wear on your car, it's
especially.
Tough.
Especially, and because the times that you're driving are inopportune. The people you're working with are not driving for a reason. Why are they not driving?
Yep. You know,
they're impaired or whatever. you don't all get long drives and Escalades with a sober guy to take him to the dealership.
Who wanted just to have his headphones in.
The other thing, by the way, if you're an Uber driver, you only get paid for the destination. You don't get paid for the return.
Oh, yeah.
I was driving one time, and they're surging prices, so it's like three times the price. I was so pumped. I was like, hey, honey, I'm working this day job, which was like two jobs ago, and I was like, hey, I need a little extra cash. So on my way home, I'm like, I'm going to do one or two fares. I'm going to make like 20, 30 bucks, and I'm going to come right home. And it's a Kanye concert in Columbus.
Okay.
And so three girls, like college girls, call a fare in. They call it in because they didn't want to surge. So they call it in right before the concert ends and leave early. I get the low fare. And then they needed a ride to their college, which was an hour and 20 minutes away.
You didn't know where it was ahead of time?
As soon as you accept it, then they tell you.
I didn't know it was like that. That's awful.
So here's what happened. I waited for them. They came out. I got paid the regular rate instead of the surge. And I find myself an hour and a half from home.
Akron.
Farther. Mount Vernon, like.
Oh, past gosh, Mount Vernon. Dude.
Yeah, it was a small college, like past Mount Vernon.
That sucks.
And so I'm just driving home by myself, not getting paid for it. And I got tipped like $5.
Yeah, Uber needs to let their drivers know if it's weird.
Like they want to own all the flexibility, though. They'll never give that up unless they're forced to.
Man.
And so my drive home, I didn't get paid anything.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was like obnoxious. These girls are like loud and having fun. And, you know, I'm just sitting there and they want to talk to me. And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to drive. You guys have fun.
Yeah,
it's better if you just enjoy your ride.
Leave me alone. I'm mad.
Yeah. And then you got to get cameras and stuff because people accuse you of things, right, which never happened to me. I'm fortunate. I had a great rating. But like, you just never know, man. It's just not a good deal.
That's messy.
But they partnered with this company so that you're not ripping through your own car. And it's a fixed expense that you're going to be able to count on.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And here's where it gets really interesting. They don't own any of the cars that they offer ahead of time. So they partner with dealers. They've got dealerships that they partner with, and then they in live time show those vehicles that they're available. And then once you pick the car you want,
negotiating with the dealer as well.
They call the dealer and they go, hey, we're buying this car.
This is so smart.
So the only thing that I couldn't figure out, and I think you might have some good perspective on this, is I don't know what they do with the cars once they get turned back in.
Yeah.
It might be as simple as just sending them to auction. Like, I don't know what they do in that situation.
Well, do they own the lease? Are they carrying the lease themselves? Or is the car owner carrying the lease? They have to carry it because the car owner is trading in all the time.
Yeah, I would imagine they're buying the car cash from the dealer, and then they
might be leasing it.
They might be leasing it from the dealer. It's a used vehicle, though.
Who has the title? Fair?
I think Fair has the title.
The leasing is all about residual rates. It's saying it's a guarantee, it's a bet of what the vehicle will be worth at a certain mileage and a certain age and a certain condition. So that's all leasing is. So you can lease a used car.
Oh, I didn't think dealers did that.
It's not a good idea because vehicles have lost so much value by that time.
Yeah.
And you don't want to lease something, like the position has to be really good. But all a lease is saying, from the investment standpoint, from the one that's offering the lease, all they're saying is traditionally Honda Accords, for example, we know that a 3-year-old Honda Accord with 36,000 miles in good condition will definitely be worth this much money. So we are going to only charge you the new buyer, the lessee is only going to be charged for the section between what they guarantee it's worth.
Yep.
And so in the same way that interest rates fluctuate and they say, well, based on the economy and the market, if these go too high, we're going to default. People are going to default. If we go lower, we'll drive them in, but then we make less money. It's just a financial calculation. In that same way, the lease companies are saying the same thing. They're betting. Here's the thing. There's a huge shortage of trade-ins oftentimes. And so what a lease does for you is it creates guaranteed used car inventory.
That makes sense.
And so that's part of what they're doing. But we don't know when you sell a car outright. You don't know when it's coming back.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't control the miles. You can't control the condition. So on a lease, you're like, you're controlling for it. And that's why people say, oh, they kill you with miles and condition. It's like, no, they're not killing you. You brought a car back that smells bad, has burn holes in it, and has 13,000 more miles.
And didn't have to pay for any maintenance over those 2 years.
And you didn't have to pay for maintenance typically. I mean, that's a typical offering because they want to keep their asset nice. But you came back with more miles and worse condition. Guaranteed, their prediction on its value is not, can't be accurate because you reduce the value. So that's what you're paying. And you're not like, it's not small. They did that calculation for 36,000 miles because the second it goes over 40, its value drops 12%. So to you, you're like, oh man, I'm getting 25 cents a mile for only 10,000 miles. That's crazy. And it's like, if you're buying a car, when it has 80,000 miles, 50,000 miles, and 34,000 miles,
different.
wildly different than 42, 56, and 87.
Yep.
Those numbers matter. 100,000 is exponentially more miles than 98,000. I mean, it's just that extra digit, the value drops. It's like, oh, is it under or over 100? Well, it's under 100,000 miles. It's over 100,000 miles.
Right.
It could be 9 miles.
Tough.
It's crazy. So that's what they're doing. And they can do used cars. You can lease a used car. Your math has to be right.
Right.
So I'm interested to see how they do that.
Yeah, and the dealers like it. You know, like we talked about MoviePass, how like they were kind of adversarial with AMC and how difficult that was for them. This is the opposite. These dealers love it.
This is a subscription model. So this is subscription. This is just like Netflix. This is so cool. I'm glad you brought this to my attention. Like, this is Netflix DVD. Some of you might not remember this, but Netflix started with what our library does now, which is you can take out a certain number of DVDs for a price.
Show up in your mailbox.
They show up in your mailbox, and you can have them however you want. You're just paying for having, they don't care what it is. You're just paying to have 6 DVDs, 4 DVDs, 2 DVDs in your possession. So what was cool about that before streaming was, you know, you have Lost or something like that, and there's 12 seasons or 100 seasons or whatever. You didn't have to wait. You could get several of the seasons or whatever, and you can keep them as long as you want. There's no late fees. However, you're paying $7 a month regardless.
Yeah, we had it out in the country. Because, like, we didn't have great movie rental options. So
it was awesome.
I loved it growing up.
I loved it. I still love it. If like, literally, like, my shoes didn't stream Disney Plus right now.
Yeah, right.
Then I would still be doing it. It just ran out of...
Yeah, we just passed it.
But this reminds me of that. And this ticks that box of on-demand. And I love it. Now, I'm sure there's some sort of throttle for changing cars every day. I'm sure that they're, like...
From what I can tell, it's every month.
Every month.
So you can do it... You know, and you pay a little bit more than if you do like a committed 3 years or whatever, but that flexibility might be worth it.
You know what else it does for you is condition-wise, it shortens the length of the unknown.
Yeah.
So if you're trading in more often, even though you would have detailing costs that would add up a little bit, I mean, that could really get you.
Well, and you pay roughly $1,000 fee up front, like a processing fee or whatever.
And they can stretch that over the cost of the details. If a detail costs them $50 in an hourly wage.
Yeah. And as a consumer, you know that if you trade that car in, you're going to have another one of those. So it's going to...
Oh, you have another $1,000 every time you trade the car in. It costs you $1,000 to trade. That's the throttle.
So that's going to mess... Like, you're not going to swap those out.
You can.
Often. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it sounds like you said about $250, $300 a month for entry cars.
Yep.
So you're talking about eating 4 months every time you trade in.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, most people who trade it in, it would be like probably on average, they might do a year, or if they have a situational change, they go, well, let's do 6 months.
Well, yeah. I mean, our situation was changed was that we were working in a corporate office and we're in a general contractor business. So
big difference.
So no question that's worth it. You know, we just would go there.
Now there's high end versions of this that are also really interesting.
Different companies or the same?
Different companies.
Okay.
So the high end versions, Mercedes has one specifically through them. That starts at $1,000 a month. BMW does as well.
Which, you know, some of you guys puckered right there at $1,000 a month. I mean, if you're financing the whole Mercedes, that's actually not.
Yeah, that's about what it costs.
I remember selling cars, $10,000, $12,000 cars. This is probably not accurate anymore, but about 60 months, 10 grand, 12 grand, all in with very little to no money down. You're looking at like $250 a month.
Right.
And so, you know, $12,000, $250, $1,000 a month. Mercedes, that's not going to get you much Mercedes.
No, man.
No.
And so that's where they start. And then...
It is a depreciating asset, too. Like, it's not something that, like, you necessarily... you own it, but...
Owning it is not ideal. The problem is there hasn't been a great way to buy them, because leases aren't great either. Like, you pay a lot when you lease a car.
Leases are... primarily, the reason lease is a great deal is because it's the better of the bad options. When I was selling leases, it was because people were financing full cars... And they didn't have the money to buy that car.
Yeah, right.
So they're leasing. They've got the tax benefit of it, a lower payment, a car that's never going to break. And those are owners that are always going to be in a payment. Their lifestyle, until they make a serious change, they will never own a car outright. Like, we really love owning cars outright.
Yeah, well, I just... Ramsey,
they never will.
I'm a big Ramsey guy, and he talks a lot about leases, says it's the most expensive way to buy a car. And he lays out a reasonable argument for that I'm not going to be able to articulate as well as he will. So if you're interested in that, go read it. But I think it makes sense. And so it's just difficult to buy a lease. I mean, I'm sure you can get in a lease in a way that's like
the
super
reason it makes sense,
advantageous.
Yeah, they the residuals the jam. So sometimes like Ford was unloading F-150s 1 year that I was selling.
Yeah,
and they gave like an 85% residual.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
So you're leasing for 2 years. They did a bunch of dealer cash that was applied toward it. You could lease a F-150 with four doors, four wheel drive, cloth, all that stuff for like $180 a month.
That's pretty cool.
Okay, so go look at your cell phone cable plan together, and that's more. There's weird hacks like that, plus the tax benefit. That's what I mean about the better of two bad options. Dave Ramsey's talking about, like, please just do the ideal option.
Right.
But for people that guaranteed will always walk around with a payment and they're not committed to that lifestyle, leasing is the better of those two if the residual is good. Yeah. Hondas hold their value so much, you're leasing such a small part of that car. And if you're always going to be flipping to the next one, just, you know.
Yeah, I can see
you
that.
You see what I mean?
But this monthly option, high-end
ones, yeah.
This monthly option would like be my jam in certain situations for sure. Those high-end ones, a local dealership here, Germain, they have one, and you can switch like whenever you want, and it's roughly $1,000 a month. And you can go, if you're going on a date, you can bring a car in and grab a convertible.
It's expensive. It's not a good money option.
No, but it's cool
unless
as heck,
that's a
dude.
Lifestyle that you want to live.
You know, like you probably fly your helicopter around, you know, on like the weekends, and then when you want to jump around town, you just go to Germain and jump into a Mercedes.
It's funny because we're comparing with our own choices.
Yeah,
but we know guys who probably make less. We just less than we do in a life. Maybe they're early in their career that have vehicles that are. We have nice trucks now, and we know guys who have trucks that are 2 to 3 times more.
Yeah,
do they than ours.
Like $1,000 car payments, though? I mean, that sounds pretty crazy.
It doesn't take long to get the math there. One of the car salesmen that I worked with early on, he was a very smart young man. It was really cool. One of the things in the car business that I found was a lot of young men, there were not young women in the industry. I'm not saying they can't, but there just wasn't.
Yeah.
There were women that who had been in sales a long time every once in a while, but it's dudes. And these young guys were just very hungry, and they were a lot of times first-generation responsible, first-generation driven. So that's what I found a lot in the car business.
Okay.
These guys did not have driven parents, did not have driven grandparents. They were coming out of rough situations sometimes, and they were like, I'm going to make it for the first time ever in my family.
Got it.
So those guys were tough because they got into a lot of that prosperity stuff. They got into a lot of that, like, fake it till you make it. You gotta dress the part,
right,
all that
right,
stuff.
Right.
And
drive
the car for the job you want, which is cool and everything to say and put on a t-shirt.
When you're a salesman.
When you're a 20-year-old guy, you know, one of the guys bought a Lexus that was, you know, loaded and new. And I got to tell you, I think he was $1,000 a month.
That's crazy.
But he was cranking it. And one of the things they used to say in our business was that debt drives salesmen.
That makes sense.
That was huge.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if your floor is low, your production is low. So they would say, debt drive salesman, borrow up, get everything you want, and then go pay for it. That's insane.
That's a scary way
that's
to live.
Horrible advice.
Yeah, scary.
Horrible advice. And let me tell you, that was 2005, 2006, and there's so many movies. About 2008.
Interesting time.
And I'm praying for those old boys.
Yeah,
it was
bro.
A tough life. I was
for real, for real.
I bought this tiny little house. Everybody else was doing interest only because, you know, God made houses. And
you deserve one.
I heard one person say, hey, real estate's awesome because they ain't making any more of it. I go, they are making.
You build
more.
Them.
Yeah,
you build,
they build them all the time.
All the time.
You're talking about land. And he goes, no, I think it's real estate. And I went, bro, what are you doing, man? You know, there's not more land.
Yeah.
But there is plenty more real estate. So he bought an interest only.
And there's plenty of land.
And there's also plenty of land. That's something you say on the coast when you've never been to the Midwest and you see that we're 98% trees.
Right.
You know, have you ever been in an airplane? Like people pass, they call us the Passover states, by
flyover
the way.
Flyover country.
Flyover country, not Passover. That's different. That's a season.
That's right.
Okay. But flyover country, but like we live here and we like it and there's land everywhere.
Lots of land.
When I was a kid, it was like five.
And I'm going to get some of it.
Oh, I'm going to give me some of that. Kanye, stay away. We love you, bud, but stop buying up our land.
Stick
bud.
To Wyoming, bro.
Stick to Wyoming. You're just the correct amount of left. We love to see you. I'd love to have Kanye as a neighbor.
Yeah, but you should have him on the podcast.
But like, I don't have the land yet. I need it.
Friend of the show.
Kanye, yeah. Also, we need to take a quick break and talk about single shot Pepto. single shot Pepto. For when you're on the go and you can't eat no mo, single shot Pepto.
Yeah, let Give me it tell a shot. Story. I'm driving back from Illinois.
Give it a shot.
And I had all this greasy fast food on the way. I started to feel uncomfortable. And I dropped by my local gas station.
How many gallons was available to you to buy? You didn't have a single shot available.
And I picked up a single shot of Pepto. And it was everything I needed for my drive home.
I thought for sure I was going to crash and die. But then I grabbed single shot Pepto. And it saved my life. And look at me now. That product doesn't exist yet. Pepto, give us a call. I'd happy to be running that campaign. Harley and I would be happy to do it. Yep. Hearts and minds.
It'll be great.
So when it comes to this vehicle thing, I think that it's going to be really hard. Similar to politics, similar to sports, similar to brand loyalty. People have very, very strong opinions about what the right way to purchase is.
That's true.
We're certainly not saying that you should lease, you should rent, you should... I mean, people pay cash for stuff and feel noble about it and spend all of their savings. You know, there's really an infinitely wrong way, an infinite number of wrong ways to do it.
Yeah.
And so we're not saying that, but this is a really neat and intuitive. I love that the market is shifting to a place where there's more options.
Yeah, man. And like, you know, the majority of millennials and younger are renting. And so if you're renting a home, or an apartment, you also would probably be interested in renting a vehicle in this capacity instead of, you know, owning one or leasing one. And so I just think it fits the lifestyle that we're seeing out of this generation.
Yeah, I agree too. I think we could go off on this for months, but even I'm an elder millennial. Are you a young millennial?
I am. Some would classify me as the like last millennial generation or the
Gen
end
Y
of the next one.
Gen Y, like an elder Gen Y.
Yeah.
I don't even know. That group isn't into labels, so we don't know.
I was just thinking, my daughter's generation is probably going to end up being named something related to the pandemic. Isn't that weird?
Oh.
Yeah.
Those Demis.
Right, whatever, yeah. Demis.
Jenny Demi.
You know, because like the boomers were named, there's the depression generation, like that's often whatever the big event is.
Yeah, they name themselves, then one of the groups named themselves the greatest, which I appreciate.
Yeah, nice guys.
Nice guys, real good. Why don't we just call ourselves the worst and we'll be known as the humble generation? So I'm an elder millennial and we hear this all the time, like kids these days, you know, that's so obnoxious and played out. Every generation does that, kids these days, you know. But one of the things that we hear all the time, and this really relates to FAIR, this isn't a stretch, this is the absolute truth, is people complain about the loyalty of employees all the time in these younger generations. So I'm an elder millennial. You're probably a latter millennial is my guess. You certainly are of a millennial mindset more.
That's true.
You know, you're closer to that gap that I'm in, which is Gen X millennial in your thinking. Maybe a little boomer. And like...
you know, honestly, that one's more accurate.
That's the truth. Yeah. Yeah. So they complain about the loyalty of employees.
Boomer.
And when you look at the jobs and you go, wow, 18 months, like I stayed in my job for whatever. Look, I've seen family members laid off from companies that they were extremely productive and loyal to after 25 years. And also I've seen them laid off after 18 months. These companies are not being loyal. And so what do you want? Like, what do you want? You want these kids to make 20-year, 30-year decisions when they've literally never once witnessed companies saying, we will take care of you for a long period of time. Now, maybe that's the way it's supposed to be. Maybe the free market demands that we're all very flexible. We're constantly reassessing our value. Maybe that liquidity of employment is part of what it should be. But the reality is, let's not pretend that the 40-year gold watch is still a thing. It's not a thing. These guys get uprooted. They get recruited from San Francisco to move here to run a company or to do something like that, and their job is always on the line. And then they, what are they going to do? Are they going to buy a house? Are they going to buy a car?
Right.
What do they do?
Yeah, and it's even tougher now because so many companies have like either insane pressure from shareholders or insane pressure from startups. This FAIR company, as an example, has fundraised $1.5 billion so far.
Sorry, hold on a second. Did you say billion?
Yeah, $1.5 billion.
Stop saying sure.
Oh, I ran the wrong one. Hold on.
That makes literally no sense to me.
There you go. That's a good one.
Surprisingly, whenever they acquire a customer, they're profitable. Based on what I can find. So at least they're profitable at the beginning.
Well, it's a simple concept and so it can be controlled by price. I like that about them.
Yeah.
That makes me hot on them.
They also have a really interesting founder. They were founded by the same guy who started TrueCar.
Oh, which is the first artificial intelligence to ever own a company. This guy's a real guy.
This is a real guy.
Okay, yeah. What's interesting about him?
I saw the commercials. Well, he's just been disrupting the car space like for a long time.
He's sick of it.
So that's just like his MO. I'm sure he had a long experience in the car space doing normal stuff. And then he was just like, hey, we need to make car pricing transparent. And so that's what he did. And all these dealers are like, stop, dude, what are you doing? And what do we know? The internet has done that, right?
Isn't that something?
And so now he's doing this. And they're backed by SoftBank, which backed a bunch of these startups. They backed WeWork, famously.
Yeah.
That one didn't work out.
Did they recoup any of that? Or?
So that created issues because SoftBank started like losing all this money from WeWork falling apart. And so it put a lot of pressure on FAIR. and they ended up putting someone from their board on the, from SoftBank's board onto Fair's board. And
you guys can all go home. We're gonna
fix this thing. Doing all this stuff, and so they stopped taking on customers for like a lot of 2020, and then recently started taking customers again.
What a great move to be willing to say, we're only going to be profitable or we're not going to do the work. Stop. We're going to stop.
Yeah, right. That's right. Big. You don't see that much. No. So I definitely think this model has a future, man. I think this is going to be very, very common, be it through dealers, through companies like Fair, whatever. But this is going to happen.
Can you imagine if I own my truck and suddenly our job requires an 8-month period of extensive driving.
Yeah.
For example, I just don't want to, I don't want to put the miles on it. I don't want to drive it, whatever. I'll just pop into one of these stupid things and do it. Can you take a month off or do you have to stay in the system? When you re-enter, is it the $1,000 or?
I think you're going to be up for that $1,000. Like whenever
Regardless, I'm just saying, like if you do 8-month period.
But yeah, you're good.
And then you're done.
And then you're done.
And then you come back 6 months later.
No problem.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, as somebody who has too many things, owning everything is exhausting.
Yeah, renting everything's exhausting too.
Certainly not looking to rent everything, but having that option to not make a 36, 40.
It's nice that you've been able to rent all the furniture in your office.
Shut up. Yeah, this is all mine, dude. It's too much. I posted on LinkedIn the other day. I said, what I do is I bring in an item, I use it, then I set it down, then I get frustrated with how cluttered the office is, then I rearrange the entire office, remove something, put that new thing that I got in a spot.
Right.
And repeat. And I was joking. I was like, so here's the new system. Bring item in, assess place for item, remove old item, then start the process. And so it was just really funny. But yeah, man, I've been thrifting most of this. And then there's the weirdest like full retail stuff. Like I bought a first edition of Kinfolk that's wrapped. That's Ooh. Mint. That was really cool. Textilepedia is that book with all the fabrics in it. And then things like that, the smaller things. But a lot of this is thrifted. I really like that model. So question. You got any questions that you had kind of considered, or can I throw one at you?
Go ahead.
So what's another industry, another area that could really benefit from this model? I'll throw one out and then you think about it. A production company like myself. So for example, I used to rent gear a lot because it would cost $6,000 for the camera body. I own the camera body and I had my two favorite lenses, but the lenses that I would want to use at times were somewhere between $2,500 and $3,500.
Yeah.
To own all of those, I would use them six times a year. Didn't make a lot of sense. So I would go rent the specialty gear from Midwest Photo Exchange, which you can still do. If you're an artist, definitely check them out. They're pretty awesome. They're here in Columbus. So I would do that. I think as a production studio, podcast gear, video gear, whatever. If everything kind of had like a Chuck E. Cheese dollar point system,
right,
and your credits covered a bundle of items up to a certain amount of credits, and then you could kind of like buy more credits and run that monthly. I think that would be kind of sick, you know, filmmaking gear, podcast gear. You could try, if you're creating every month, you could try new things.
Any expensive depreciating asset would be a good fit. So I think of expensive computers. You know, someone who needs an expensive computer will probably need to replace that computer often.
Oh, so like if I'm running AI / video rendering / like really high end, I need the newest thing for the next 2 years because the tech, the demand. Oh, I see what you're saying. The demand of the technology increases.
Yeah.
And the value of the item decreases. So every year the files are bigger and more robust and take more processing. So if I just knew that I had to pay $250 a month for my system and it would always do what I needed it to do.
Yeah. And then you can swap pieces out throughout the month or, you know,
you can swap the whole thing or you can just swap for the new video card.
Right.
Exactly.
Might be a good fit.
Here's the problem.
You got to make the economics work as a business.
They got to find the value of that item that literally became super low.
Yeah.
Those video cards and stuff are going to be tough. So
that's the hard part.
Well, what's cool about residuals is you make it up.
Sure do.
So, right. So when it comes to those video cards and stuff, I could be paying for 80% of that over a 3-year period.
Right.
But the fact that it encompasses the entire system is really cool.
Yeah.
And so auto upgrade on a system would have to be a dependable system, but it would make a lot of sense. I mean, you couldn't do an Apple because it's all included.
Right.
But yeah, you would have to have like a shell. It'd be like modular.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, we kind of see it with cell phones. Apple does the iPhone upgrade program, which is really similar. You just pay your phone payment like $40 a month every month, and then you get the new one when it comes out. That's close. But like, you know, ideally you have multiple, in that same situation, multiple phone options, right?
It's also been like a bad deal every time.
Right.
So I think what's interesting about Fare and the car company is like,
it works really well with cars.
It's, yeah, it seems like the dollar amount's high enough.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're right. It has to be a high, high value thing.
And you could probably apply it to like boats and other similar things.
Could you apply it to, like, I have no idea, right? Could you apply it to weird like conceptual things like insurance?
Isn't insurance kind of like that?
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is like, are there things that could become modular and swappable at a moment's notice? I think that feels really weird with insurance because you're like, oh, am I going to not be covered for this item or whatever? But are there other things like that that like are not a physical good?
I don't
that you could swap. Weird. It'd take some thought. It'd be a weird one, but I think the principle that I'm trying to interject there would be the idea of on-the-fly customization that's very, very simple and it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Like during health insurance, you have enrollment periods and all those different things. It's complicated. You're kind of getting whatever your employer. So that modular nature is part of this. It's like, I'm going to swap out this unit for this unit. You could do it with toys.
What about like, oh, toys is an interesting one.
What about sick, like literally?
Yeah, because your kids are going to get sick of them.
Yeah, you could, that's crazy. High-end, excuse me, high-end, like, remote control cars and, like.
Yeah, dude, all around. My daughter gets sick of her toys at 9 months so quickly.
What about landscaping?
Oh, that's a whole thing. That's interesting.
You put a little putt-putt in there, then you switch it out to trampoline, then you switch it out to reading yard. What about that? You get a certain number of swaps for that.
Yeah. Yeah, if you can make the economics work. I was just thinking like, you know, high-end art is technically an asset, so you wouldn't want to do high-end art. But if you did like middling art.
Well, they do it. They do high-end art.
Well, yeah, you just ideally from an economic standpoint, you'd want to keep that art because
it's not depreciating.
It's going to appreciate. So you'd want to do it with like middling art that probably isn't going to appreciate and you could swap that out.
What about we take it even further and we say decor in general?
Yeah, yeah.
So I've had several people ask me if I would do their office for them.
Right.
So,
but now are we just renting it? Are we just doing furniture?
What's
rental?
The difference? What's the difference? So the difference with the car is there's a mandate. Yeah. What is subtly different about this? Because that's the thing. Well, there is a difference.
It's because it hasn't been in this space. Like, you know, monthly ownership of things has been around, right? Like you can rent your wardrobe as an example, rent the runway, that kind of stuff. We haven't seen it with cars. And so I think the difference is that it is a car.
The other thing about a car is you don't want to get rid of it when you buy it. You're not buying it with the goal of getting rid of it. You want to keep it. But you've got that like option, you know, for the unknown. So it's almost like, what about a modular home? It's a big deal. It's not just the decor. It's the layout of the house. You know, in the same way that I said landscaping.
Yeah, you could do like a monthly home rental would be interesting because rentals are all long-term relatively.
But literally, like, you can change the layout of the house.
I guess you can go month to month, but yeah.
Well, I mean, you don't have to do month to month. You could do
annual. It'd be really cool. I had this idea a while ago.
Oh, good. Okay, so I didn't think of this one. Okay, go ahead.
I told you about it and you're going to remember
it. I know,
it.
I'm kidding.
I was thinking about a monthly service like that where you did a month-to-month rental. But you could do it anywhere. There were multiple locations, similar to like how timeshare companies do it, but multiple locations. And then you can just up and move to another one and have the same
and you
payment,
get alerts when it opens.
All that stuff.
And so every day you're getting alerts like, hey, a new one opened up in Seattle.
You want to go? Move.
Yeah.
So
it'd be interesting
to do something like that.
If a home, instead of location, you have life change, right? So the reason I'm kind of bringing up this remodeling thing, I really like that idea. That's really cool. That's an economic model externally in the same way that changing the car, but changing the location.
Right.
What if we took location out of it and we talked about life change in your home? So like every year we reassess our home and we go, oh, Claire's getting older, is going to want independence. We would like some space from the kids and we go to bed. And so we're moving and changing. So what if a home was built in a modular way on purpose that there was a reassessing of your situation and literally the walls, the layout.
That's some space age stuff right there, bro.
Bro, but I think it's doable if it's constructed that way.
Man, what's interesting.
Because you got load bearing. If you make the house beamed and load bearing as an open shell.
Yeah.
And then you say, here are, oh, you know who did something similar to that was the guy on Homes on Apple TV. he has an apartment in Hong Kong, which is like...
I've seen that one.
Yeah, so he does that. But what if a home was built and then... You smell what I'm stepping in, right?
Oh, like, yeah, I'm with you.
The home is built and you change your lifestyle and you go, I really just want to have a walkout garden.
Yeah. What's so interesting about that is the people who were like building homes, like the first modular homes in the 50s, like kind of had that vision in mind. It was like very futuristic and, you know, that was like the direction like they the wanted to go. Like the
catalog homes?
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, I don't know if the American Dream like killed that vision.
Was it but my understanding of it, maybe you're going a different direction. My understanding of it was that it was that way of the initial build. Like you start with a shell and then it's like so easy that you initially make a different decision.
Well, all I'm meaning is that kind of thinking was really prevalent in the home ownership space during a time when you probably wouldn't think about it in the 50s.
That's right.
And then it disappeared. And so I just think that's a really interesting thing because it
you could sell pre-made layouts,
you know?
And yeah, absolutely. And literally a team comes in, removes everything off your walls and moves the walls to a different architectural layout.
Be cool, dude.
Suddenly your kids move out and you want a larger master bath, a larger whatever, and you want one spare bedroom instead of four rooms, you want three rooms.
Yeah.
And whatever. And a team comes in over the weekend and you go to one of your rentals that you can just go to whenever
you want.
Permanent Airbnb kind of vibe.
Yep.
And you come back in and literally the inside of your house is just laid out perfectly for you.
That'd be sick.
How sick would that be?
Be real
sick. I would love helping people manage their space that way.
Yeah.
That's kind of like what Ron at
helping you Bluegrass, manage your space the way you always wanted to.
Yeah, helping you manage the way you've tried it. That's stupid. But yeah, I really, really like that. You would have to build in a way that more layouts were possible inside. That would be a discipline that I don't possess at this moment, but that would be really
cool. Yeah, an architect could figure that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And the key would be that like right now I'm dealing with load bearing, I'm dealing with like wiring and insulation and everything, but if those wall panels, for example, could be finished in the same way, but basically latched,
yep,
then, you know, and insulated and that sort of thing, it's like, hey, I just started a new business. I want a workshop.
Done.
But you don't do it a little. You do the whole thing. Like
right.
When you do it, you pay 10 grand and you do the whole thing.
Yeah, that'd be cool, dude. That'd be really cool. I like it.
I think we're onto something there.
Well, that's about all I got on Fair.
I love that, man.
And
what's
this model?
What's the summary there in terms of how do you see it as disruptive? How do you see it as something you can participate in? Obviously, we have the answer there. And then how do you see it as something that's changing kind of right away? Those three things.
Yeah, there is not a current way that is attainable to the average person to own a car in this capacity, to own it monthly, to be able to turn the keys in whenever you want, essentially.
To make a change when your life changes.
Yeah, that doesn't exist right now. You're stuck to your car one way or another, and that can be a really difficult position to be in.
If you're a boomer, you're thinking, oh, these kids, I'm not making fun, I'm being serious. Like, I kind of was thinking, too. Your initial thought is these kids are discontent and want to drive a Ferrari this month and whatever. What's really happening, just to give you some empathy for that age group, is their lives are very uncertain. They were told when they were in college, they'll get a degree, they'll make $1 million more because of it. Now they're applying for jobs outside of their industry because they can't find anything. And those companies are making mass layoffs all of a sudden 3 months in after they moved. So they're not doing it because they want to change cars every month. They're doing it because they don't trust the system to sustain
them. Yeah, you don't
have
to make a $20,000 commitment now.
That's right.
You know, that's a big deal.
So that's awesome. How do you think that it's going to immediately make changes in the industry?
Well, I think if it takes off and it's early enough that we don't really know how successful it's going to be, I think that it'll be a dramatic shift. And anytime you walk into any car dealership, you will be able to buy a car outright.
You think everybody's going to add this option?
Or rent it monthly. I think that'll probably be how it goes. Traditional leases might disappear altogether, maybe.
Yeah, it just has to be a better deal
right.
on the lease. You don't have the $1,000, you don't have the option. You're giving things up
and
you're... whatever, which they're fine with. They get that inventory back.
Yeah. And then I think dealerships will make it work economically, but I think it'll be prevalent across the board if it gets adopted. And my gut tells me it'll get adopted.
And what about the participation, Pate? Is it just a simple answer or is there something more to it about participation?
What's cool about it. It's just like I literally tried to do it. Like if they were in more states, I might have done it. So you can absolutely participate in it. And it just seems like it's a good fit for anybody.
Dude, great. Thank you so much for bringing this to my attention and our listeners' attention. This is such a neat topic. And like, folks, if you're not in, you know, that's why we're doing Disruptated is because there isn't a great way to stay in touch with these things. And there are things that are solving huge problems that you just either know about or you don't know about.
Yeah.
You know, like I use Fabric as an example. You know, people are out getting, you know, getting rashes and sore and getting cut up by their clothes because they're like, well, I just hate working in the summer because my shirts tear me up. And it's like, people have invented shirts that use your sweat to cool you off. They have a, you know, UPF 65 that keeps the sun off your skin, and it's soft to the touch but rigid and doesn't tear. That has been solved. Like, I'm wearing pants right now that don't get cut by blades. We've talked about knife fights. That yeah. I can, that are not ripped, and I've been tearing the kitchen out and everything else like that. They stretch, they're reinforced, and like those problems have been solved. So there's really, I'm not saying that all of these problems have been solved, but the way that our free market works and innovation and entrepreneurs work is they're going, this is a huge problem. And instead of saying, so we can't do it, they're going, well, what if? And they're saying, could if? And they're putting their goals, limitations, they're trying new things. And guys, if we don't support these things, not saying that we're endorsing fair, but I'm saying as an example, if we don't support things, they go away. That's how startups work. You vote with your dollars.
Absolutely.
And so when you see something that you absolutely love and believe in, it might be a place to put a little bit of cash. Now, of course, this is a huge decision, and we're excited to see how this matures. Our purchases and our listeners' purchases are not going to make a difference here. Like, this is either going to survive or it's not going to survive.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's doing okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a fair summary.
All right, y'all. Well, thanks for listening to Renaissance Radio, specifically our Disruptated segment. Harley, thanks for joining once again, and we will talk to you guys.
Can't wait to do it again.
Super soon.